So it becomes a part of my bonding with this little machine, such as it is. I'm surprised at how quickly the time flies. I mean, it's been over an hour since I started it, but you know, and I don't want to. I should say I don't want to keep you guys too much beyond what you know.
Yeah,
what you
we
want.
We all have to do this.
Yeah. So
well, like my entomology friend said, time sure fun when you have these flies. You can erase that.
Oh no, I'm going to quote that. when it gets to be time, you know that you say,
yeah,
well, this is getting to be too much. But again, I know that you said, well, we keep the afternoon open, but I don't want to. If I'm beginning to impose, tell me. So.
Where was that?
We were talking
about entomology.
Yeah. Now at least you were passing on your own stuff,
right.
Even
mm-hmm.
though it didn't
right.
get.
And I also was corresponding here with the university and the museum and collecting material for eventual professor, eventual PhDs in medical entomology.
Okay.
So,
yes, we were
sifting
mud down stream banks.
The CDA there, we went through three people there. I guess two overlap most of the time. When we arrived, Mr. Schmucker was there, of the Schmucker jelly fame.
Really?
Yeah.
Part of the family?
Part of the family.
Oh, it was a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he was a laid-back old gentleman.
So already
naturally acculturated by age and maturity to Lao standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pretty much let us work at what we were. Up there for and gathered messages for us and from the radio but didn't pressure either the law or any particular thing that I can recall. But he was did Bud Lang come next? Or did Radnor come in? I didn't get to that in your notebook.
But he was another pushy sort, a very assertive, progressive sort.
He had much better personal skills, I guess, because he didn't alienate love. But it was tricky to play the three
again.
The three bosses
again. Same thing again. Yeah.
But he was in Moon. I guess that's why I didn't interact with him for the first 6 months or so, because he was in Moon King. Moon King was where one of the towns we were going to go to, and
that
was
a
about
smaller beach.
And Bud Lane came in and replaced Schmucker, and he was a very personable and laid back young folk. So we got along pretty well with him. I guess right now it must have moved up to Siberia, because I remember him being Siberia when Nancy nursed the rabbit dog back to health. They were inside
what?
When they did that. And I'm in the medical in the morning, and I said, shoot that damn thing!
And then he had to go get the shot. And he died of
rabies. Of course they're going to die of rabies. You can't, it's incurable.
Yeah.
They didn't know this?
They didn't. She was too in love with the dog to recognize that it was rabies.
Oh, okay.
Fearful that it was rabies, but hoping that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And Where in that part of the world you just don't get a chance.
No. No, it could be really bad.
Was there anything else? Yeah, we interacted some with a Protestant missionary who lived in Firebird.
Yeah, fairly close to him.
Yeah, and he was one of the more acrimonious fellow people I've ever met. He was a proselytizing Pat Buchanan Christian.
Oh no!
And his acrimony against the Lao, because they were unfavorable. But he wouldn't call it a religion. They had their heathen beliefs, and they were unfavorable. So he was living in slavery and trying to save the mountain, by convert the mountain people from there.
I mean, the Lao are very strong Buddhists. The monks were an evident element.
Yeah.
Very much a part of their culture.
We had to interact with them because we were Americans. But he admitted that it's in your notebook. I actually got him to put it in your notebook that he didn't want to deal with us because he didn't want the mission to suffer from association with USA. Didn't want to be part of the U.S. involvement with the war and with the government. So he was trying to stay aloof from aid. So he didn't want to interact with us.
That may have been actually kind of wise for him.
Yeah, to an extent.
I can mm-hmm. see that.
Yeah. And
maybe not for his reasons, but I can see it.
We could see that IDF was pretty correct, because we weren't supposed to proselytize and be associated with religions either. So, we kept sort of a friendly hands off.
That's wise. I mostly had American military people around me.
They were present, but we weren't supposed to see them.
They weren't there.
Oh, they were there, but you didn't see them.
Well, I had some interesting experiences. I started out in the same thing, extension.
Right.
I had an assistant, and I had a counterpart, but she had a baby. So she was doing a lot of commission for a while. And trying to be modern, she wasn't good at nursing.
Oh.
Just I was sick, but you know.
You just wanted Nestle?
Yeah. Condensed milk, sweetened condensed milk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But anyway. And my assistant and I, because there were a lot of the mountain tribes around there, and we got interested in the beautiful weaving that they did, both the Lao and the mountain tribes. And we actually learned how to weave. And had a loom at the house for a while. And then we started getting women to give us samples of their cloth, and then eventually with other people who started a store, museum, and sell it, stuff like that. And that was near the end, but then we got that going, it was near the time we went home, so I don't know what happened.
Oh, but it took off, and it was really exciting because you could see she was touching a chord with the people
because it was
giving them a cash income and appreciation for their traditional culture at that same time. So and the joy of having an American
take an
interest in the traditional culture and the traditional part of the culture and they were just thrilled. They would give us the material if we were so happy with it. And then the fact that we would give the money back was just gravy. And they just so it was a way to get them to modernize without losing their roots.
Yeah.
And so I felt I was encouraging her all the time because this I thought was one program where they could jump to the 20th century in material in technology without losing the roots where they
got. Or at least not as much.
Not as much, yeah.
Well, this,
so we,
as part of this, I went up to Bun Hoos Dive, which is right on the high border, high Burmese border.
Okay.
And had a very interesting experience with the opium trade. and wrote about it in my monthly report and was told that I didn't see that.
Oh, no.
The American planes are obviously taking this stuff out.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
See, when we were there...
Was that Air America?
Yeah. When we were there, U.S. government policy was denying the existence of opium in Southeast Asia. They just... The drug war in the U.S. is being fought in Afghanistan and in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And we were pouring horrendous amounts of money into trafficking drugs in that area where U.S. government was outright completely denying the existence of opium in Southeast Asia. Or the drug trade at all. And you know, we meet time correspondents and Jan Shunt and, you know, and we weren't supposed to talk to them, but, you know, it would be, they didn't have to tell us they were time correspondents.
That's right. Is that a kind of don't ask, don't tell?
or
don't ask, but we will tell.
but, you know, it was common knowledge that this opium was $16 a kilo in Vientiane, and
you could buy it in the market. I mean,
$2,000 per plane load. But here, U.S. military had absolute air supremacy in Laos and Vietnam at the time. No plane took off or landed anywhere in the region without clearance from the U.S. military, and yet the choppers and the opium planes were going over all the time.
And never
any trouble.
Mm-hmm. But when you were, you saw them being loaded up.
Yeah. And money and being paid for. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were Laos army officers in uniform, you know, were obviously right in the middle of this.
Mm-hmm.
We were
like royal.
Was it
Royal Laotian Forces or was it the
Hmong? Yeah,
Hmong.
The royal.
Okay, it wasn't the Hmong.
These were Lao.
Okay.
Yeah. They were trading. The Hmong were growing. They were what we called the Mao. They lived in the hills and they were actually growing the land. I have a picture of a Yao woman, the whole thing. She showed us all the stages of collecting the sap out of the poppy.
Uh-huh.
That was in
Songjiang. Yeah. About what year? That would have been, what, 60?
It was 67?
Early 68. Yeah, well, no, I asked about whether it was Hmong or male or Yao or whatever, because that's where the U.S. government recruited a lot of fighters to keep away from Viet Cong and Pathet Lao. So I thought maybe they were the ones, you know, involved in it. But it was Royal Laotian.
No, the big guys.
Yeah, the big guys. Okay.
They weren't the
rovers.
Right, yeah.
They were the ones with the connections to sell it on the market, either in Vientiane. We heard, and I'm sure it's true, it was being taken to Vietnam for sale to U.S. soldiers.
I'm sure some of the ones.
Some of it, yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, where else?
Now, the Lao...
You go where the money is.
Yeah.
The Lao use opium as part of their culture. The old people smoke it.
Mm-hmm.
Happy way to end your day. and it's open. It's not illegal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some American kids got in trouble with marijuana. Was that after during the time that American diplomats here?
Or caught smoking pot or
no,
something.
No, but that wasn't what they did. They painted themselves green and caused it rubbish. I don't know. They did something, you know, some kind of prank like that.
Yeah.
Right after we left or right at the end of our tour?
It was right at the end of our tour. But there were stories of IDF volunteers and others who packed away just souvenir opium pipes. And it was enough goo on it to get When they got.
And most of several of our friends talked about crying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were such. On the military thing, though, what was evident was that the Royal Lao Army had recruited all of the available young men down to about the age of 16, 15.
Yeah.
They just weren't around. So the women and the old men would have to do the field.
Yeah, that was one part of the reason why the demonstration farm and the agriculture in Paraguay was fallow. Most of the fields were fallow. They weren't being farmed.
Because the men were in the army.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to mention that too.
Yeah.
Laos went from a major rice exporting country during the French and right after the French to helplessly deficient.
Mm-hmm.
In rice in a major imported country during the U.S. involvement. USA was the enemy of the fight. The U.S. government involvement there was the oppressor that they were fighting for independence for. The perceptions of the people there was that their problem stemmed from the U.S. involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to say, gee, if the U.S. government started doing this in Massachusetts, what they were doing in Laos in Massachusetts, we would have another Shays rebellion.
Right.
In short order.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back to Massachusetts and found it was pretty close to and we're just being elected and it looks
but the Lao aren't like that. They're way back. Very accommodating, very nice.
Mm-hmm. But the cloth stuff really took off.
Yeah.
And you were beginning to market it in Vientiane, or what?
We had a store.
With any overseas branches, or was it just
there? No, it was
just there.
That was the whole business.
Yeah, right.
Of course, things changed politically.
In Siberia, or?
It was still
another 6 years.
Yeah.
And for the next decade here, we would see the handicraft.
Mm-hmm.
You can recognize the village from the design.
Ah,
yeah.
So you saw the village here?
We've seen the village, recognize the various village designs here among people.
Shops.
Who, not in shops, but in people, college students.
Or in some of the
But so that for a decade afterwards, anyway, there was still a market going on.
At least as far as Vientiane. That's what I was trying to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though it wasn't marketing so that it would wind up here in the States.
Sure.
There
were people going to Southeast Asia
and picking it up without having to go to each individual village to get a bunch of patterns and different colors.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Then it did live on after this.
We bought quite a bit. We got it out in the village.
Yeah, right. Well, did someone follow up on that project that you had?
Yes, I wasn't the only one involved, so there were.
Oh, well, I meant IBS people.
IBS,
okay,
yeah.
So, yeah, Rover, Shane Rover was
there. Yeah, right. And
she was in Juan Cabana, of course, that's a food area. So.
Ah, okay.
Jane Rover.
Yeah,
Bob and Jane Rover.
Yeah, you should see them. They're not. They were our age when they went to Laos, so they're really sitting up there now. They must be close to 80. And they live up in Maine.
Jane and Bob Roper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they're 30 years past 50, so they're 80, 85.
Yeah.
Wow.
But they're still,
we still get Christmas cards from them. And they still,
he's still doing handicraft, he's still teaching it. They've got Laos students that they sponsor up there. I mean, you really should talk to them.
You know, if...
They're great people.
I, unfortunately, I did leave the list that the IVS office had. You know, I left it back home.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have their address, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean, because then I could always, you know, if they're not on the master list, I could, you know, get them from yours and make some sort of contact. Yeah, I mean, if they are on the list, well, then fine. But if they're not, but...
Liz Candia was your coordinator in Vienna.
Yeah, right. I had no idea where she was.
Yeah. It would be nice to get in contact with her again.
Liz Candia.
Yeah.
That name might have stuck out in my head. That's kind of an interesting name. I don't think that was on the list. I mean, like any organization, they, you know, that I think it's probably, you know, 50% are just lost in terms of...
Well, she may have been remarried.
Yeah.
We did a lot of marriage work on
that. Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't see too much of that in Silicon
Valley. Well, it happened after.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's very possible.
In the
30
years since, yeah. most of the couples.
Yeah,
I know one of the married couples. Yeah, one did split up that I know of. But another, they have been together for a long time. They met during the training. I was going to ask about, you said that a lot of those 14 originals died. While they were in Laos, and how did those happen? Not just because of sickness or disaster or natural incidents of driving off a cliff
waiting car crash at sea.
Okay,
but recovering from malaria.
Yeah,
so he's sick and then drowned. Okay, so who was that?
Oh boy.
See, as the church bells chime out his name. I bet that'll come through real clear on this. Oh, no. They go off at 6 a.m.
I'm sure that's illegal to go off that early. Something that rhymes.
Call on the church.
Sorry, I like
to,
one day a week.
Okay, well, I guess, you know, that's one particular name. But the others, then, maybe
one
five
was,
or six?
One was shot in his village.
One shot in his village because of...
The story goes by CIA because he was being too effective.
What? He was shot by the CIA because he was too effective?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. CIA was
didn't want you to be effective?
At pacifying the Laos. They were at war. What was the... That was Fred Scheidler, the one in the shot?
He was, too. It may have been him.
The guy at the other guy, the guy that went to Vietnam in our group, Dave Gittleson,
mm-hmm.
was killed in Vietnam, also under personal circumstances. He got the something that was people heard working on, and right after that was shot.
Gittleman?
Gittleson.
Gittleson. Okay.
Well, after Vietnam.
He was Vietnam. But Fred Scheidler was. And a close friend, and he was afraid right there, drank a lot, and he was super, just super, a people person.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shot in the village. And his best friend in the neighboring village, his sister, was sent home after that, basically because he couldn't handle the shooting.
Well, that could be true.
Yeah, but I'm any questions.
Well,
the CIA, we would, and I never pursued it because of the dangers involved.
No, I can understand that. I'm just trying to understand it.
Well, from my own experience, that the Lao villagers would tell me about American... I would go out with my Lao counterpart to a village, to a new... Often it would happen in a new village when we'd arrive, and I'd be interviewed. And I'd say, oh, you don't look anything like Frank Howard.
Frank Howard.
Howard.
But you are.
Yeah, he was here last week.
Someone was using your name?
Someone was moving through Siberia using my name. And we talked to other IDSs.
Did you ever hear this?
We talked to other IDSs, and yes, it happened in other places as well. There were CIA agents moving through the villages, picking up information and claiming it to be IDS volunteers.
Huh.
And because we had good rapport,
people would tell you that as soon as they realized who you really were.
And they would tell, but they would tell the CIA people the information they wanted because they thought they were IDS.
If they hadn't met you,
right,
they would have heard your name, and they would have said, "Oh, he's a pretty good guy."
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's very, very dangerous to pursue that. But I never could find out if the Lao were just testing me to pursue that. You know, they could be telling me these stories to get me to go to USAID and spring the word, and then it would come back to them that, yes, I do have contacts with the CIA, and I was a CIA agent.
That's a little Byzantine.
So, yeah, because we did get rumors all the time. You know, the fact that Lao were here, we shouldn't go down this road that they're here.
Right.
We'll go this way to go to this village. And well, I never told you that they told me that. Because if it got back to
Absolutely.
The villagers that I was telling you say where the Tetet Lao was, I'd be gone.
Well, or your counterparts would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I had a similar situation. Once the NPA was in my village, and when I was traveling anywhere, and one time a government patrol stopped the former weapons carrier kind of truck that the military used when it was civilian. Local drivers would carry people up and down the into the brush area. And one time the truck was stopped, and this full colonel was in charge of the little operation, and he got me out of the truck, and he was asking me about, you know, what was going on in the backcountry. And I knew, but I wouldn't tell, because there were people standing all around, and they would have heard me tell this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they only would have had a sixth grade education, which many Filipinos in rural areas might, by then it was in English, and they would have picked up enough, and it would have gotten back. And people that I worked with, even if I was okay, might have gotten really hurt.
Yeah.
Because some people were shot when the NPA was ambushed successfully by a government patrol. Somebody had to be at fault.
Yeah.
No, I understand that situation.
Yeah. So, you know, in answering your forum, the Tetet Lao and Royal Lao Army were minimally affected our daily lives and our work relations and everything. But they were omnipresent and affected everything that went on. So, you know, how are you going to circle the two extremes and say, yes to both of them?
It wasn't designed to be a trick question. Trust me.
Yeah, but you can see that dichotomy there. That you have to answer both ways. You can say yes. That in interpersonal relations on a one-to-one, it was minimal effect, but in the bigger picture, they were omnipresent, and you had to...
Both sides, and you had to know how to step and where and all that. Yeah, well, I can't understand, though, why... I mean, this may be a fool question. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but...
lots of detail, but I'll try to
answer. No. I think you explained the details, and I didn't catch the logic of why the CIA would want an IVS, effective IVS, or killed. Effective in doing his job, you meant?
Mm-hmm. The Dave Gittleson, it was feeling among IVSers that it was the CIA that had it killed. And then when it later, when it happened to Fred Scheidler, that it was under sort of similar circumstances.
But the effectivity would have promoted pacification, right?
Yeah. But
what's wrong with that? Because it would have linked the people closer to the Lao government, right?
Not necessarily. Would it link the people closer amongst themselves with allegiances to the local government, mm-hmm. not to U.S. Goals.
Well, the areas they were working in
were followed. Really followed
the local government may well have been more
questionable. Okay, all right. That begins to make sense.
Not necessarily, but the local government, or the Royal Lao government would have very little influence.
Okay.
The Petit Lao may. I've forgotten the exact. I used to.
Because I would have thought that if you were effective in your job, that it would have promoted peace, prosperity, happiness, and then everyone would have, you know, been more supportive of the royal family, and that would have been good for the United States if we were linked up to the royal family. Yeah. But what you're saying is that the local area would not have necessarily been linked up with the royal government.
That isn't. I forgot the details. That isn't.
Okay. Yeah. That's where my life is right. Because that's what I thought you were meaning.
Part of it may be the intelligence of the CIA or something has been not being able to quiz the religion.
That could be.
But definitely.
And especially if it's in a forward area, I could understand how they might want to eliminate rivals. In effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's what the idea of individual might have become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And or maybe they followed up on the same thing that happened to you, that you didn't follow up on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you might have said something. Okay. Oh, you can't throw something. Maybe not even the one.
Yeah.
Well, Fred was shot as a result of a village being bombed by the U.S. government.
Oh, and he complained about it?
No, they took it, the villagers took it out on him.
Oh, the villagers shot him.
That's the story there.
Oh, okay.
But he witnessed that the bombing. So the CIA could well have shot him to prevent him from telling the world.
That's
that
the bomb.
The bombing was American.
Yeah.
So it was a New York situation.
Oh, okay.
And so John Hickey and Sharon bombed a friendly village. Get an idea to him. Lou Fisher then went home to do it. He was really the story. And he was told if he ever told the story, they would say he went home with another person. That's when I said, don't go home, you don't have that story over your head for the rest of your life. But he went home. But he didn't have another person. And I believe his story.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, he would tell me, they send me home with another person, so I can tell you.
I'll be after that.
Franklin came in and started the good time, we kept it with very low profile of the old campus I came back here.
Uh-huh.
And at the Olympic World IFC, we kept it like this. And it's really a shame. I felt guilty about, we witnessed some of it and knew some stories, but we just couldn't wait. We knew there was time for peace.
Yeah, and how much of it was
done. Yeah, and the idealists and things that they're still idealistic and didn't know what the price was.
Yeah. I was trying to think of
it was a scary time for us. And for, it's actually scarier here during the underworld. You
were
the president from Venezuelan life. In a way. In the mindset, in a way. Because they were ready to take away the assignment. You could survive that. Or you could come home to take it. And you're also having great fun thinking of...
One step ahead of the passport. First we got married this way.
In time?
It was just in time. But then they decided to do that. But you got your service for the time for a bunch of decisions.
Or for the, on the day service for me?
The bike won first year.
Yeah, they did. They did. By drove. Yeah. And they're the only help is the leader to it. The way the dead flight. But I'm beginning to feel bad. We've been talking for a long time. You know, you told sort of complete stories, but I don't know what to ask you.
How did you get a sense of this?
Yeah.
I was trying to think, there were a couple other things I wanted to make. I got the youth were in the army, and that really affected the agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was the medical policy of ideas that volunteers. I understand it affects people of volunteers. State legislature down here, he's trying to get a federal law on protecting people and people around here. But the IDS that is heading the film is trying to bring diseases to the United States and start clearing our tools and healthy places.
Oh, for long-term?
Long-term stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I came back here to get some help. And then I got malaria and took myself right back here. So that's all.
I
got to go fix myself.
Yeah, right.
Professor went down to Kaiser's Veterinary Hospital.
He's
going to look at the flies.
Yeah.
They couldn't find
malaria.
But these were all.
They
thought
he
was a problem.
Are the symptoms similar?
No.
I wouldn't think so.
They said
my late wife had it. Yeah. Remember that.
now I know I'm aware of it, but
yeah, no,
from Miss Johnson. He likes being tickled instead of
yeah, so I unfortunately didn't come down with anything.
I mean, yeah,
it's fairly lucky.
But that was, that was somewhat true in any country, and you can understand it in any country because medical facilities were limited at that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you can, people were out of, were out of, people were out of, so, you know, one medical facility.
Oh, you mean even for a USAID hospital? Yeah.
There was a dispensary that came over to the U.S. Also out in the field, but perhaps not quite as primitive because you were going on after bugs up and forth because you didn't have to support him out. Thank you.
we pretty much, you know, we talked a lot about
yeah, you circled all of them, you know.
Except for this one, you know.
Then you've only got three. It's just like you're the same thing. Look at it. Close, friendly, work-related.
These are like mine.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't get to talk on the phone or something.
No, no, I didn't even know you were talking about. But yeah, we've known each other since 1959.
Oh, really?
We've been saving buddies.
You mean Columbia?
Yeah.
Oh, I did a little bit of that, but in Illinois, they're not too many cities.
Oh, not too many. Not at all. How about in Philippines? If you have to like it in Philippines.
That might be. I didn't know.
You can think about that time with me.
Yeah, there might have been, but that probably would have been near Mount Pinatubo.
Yeah.
That could get real hot.
Yeah. The big place in the big mountain place.
But you know, I'm looking down some of these questions that I primarily work at. We've already run into a lot of detail on that. I guess relationship with people. That's mostly with, what we talked about really is mostly with the people that we're working with.
Yeah.
You know, and the relationships there. I guess just didn't talk at all about just with like neighbors or villages or things like that.
That is
true
for them.
Yeah.
Hello.
Neither of us got real fluent in our.
Neither of us are people.
Yeah, and then establish a sort of relationship with a few particular merchants.
Yeah.
Was there any tension between the IVF as an organization, the AID, in terms of your assignments and what was done with AID money by IVF? That you saw in the first place?
Well, with the Pone Hong situation, that was became pretty open towards the end when we were and part of the problem was that IVF was trying to direct us and help us solve the problem through their channels, while research was had a similar line, and then I did, and that line was connected, those two lines were connected at both ends, and those communications there were not the same.
IVF was saying one thing, and IVF another.
Right.
Well, what I see is, and we spent long hours discussing this with other IVFs, is that IVF was supposed to be a independent, but not money.
That's the basic dilemma, Because you joined with the idea that it's going to be autonomous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No government, no religious organization.
Pretty much the entire budget changed. At the time, you didn't have that. They had sent the money.
I don't think they might.
That's
I don't know.
Like, and of course, the rub was, you know, how much did we have to be under their time? Of course, we used the facilities.
Logistics support.
Yeah.
Is without that, I guess.
Yeah.
We could not drive to where we
could
drive.
There was no road. So you had to fly in an AID mixture, fly in some stuff.
But so I think there was a little rub at the local level with the CBA thinking of things you said was the fun that I was saying.
But you were their boy.
Yeah.
And give you orders.
Right.
And IBS is saying.
But we could deal with that one because IBS was back at that. There was a higher level conflict too that we stuck some things off occasionally and interrupted when I moved from Hong Kong. But there was a higher level one of a conflict in the IBS office with the research office. And also telling also with the same that was filtered down to the field. So that IBS office would occasionally tell us something that you said that had told them. You know, so that if Lauren Ledley wanted me to do something, there were three ways you could communicate. You could come and tell me directly, pick up that cat, or you could go to the law and discuss with people
and have them tell them to pick up that cat.
Right. You could also call Jensen,
say, your man is not picking up cats for me.
Yeah. And no, you would call Yusei. Go over to IBS office
and tell him
to tell the boy in Konon to pick up that cat for me. and I would get all three messages. Mm-hmm. Of
sooner or later, you might get picked up. Maybe you're your cat, if you're lucky.
Often garbled.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was another point.
Another
that I just realized that the communication system in life her notebook is just filled with phone message from Yanshan dated yesterday that we just got come to Yanshan for a meeting on the next available plane.
Uh-huh.
And we, you know, we'd get all ready and go down, and then it would turn out that the situation had changed, and the message would be changed, that sometimes we'd be on the plane.
Yeah.
But the message had three or four steps where it could go missing and you'd never get it, or it would be garbled. And
so directly
come to
Yeah, so it could be meeting in Vientiane next week. Can I give you transportation? Or you think you have to come on these next transportation? You make your own way and then find that you're not supposed to be there anyhow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what about tension in terms of the U.S. activity in the political military? Was that already heating up between IBS's organization and AIB?
Yeah, it was a certainly not empty assessment. There was a serious philosophical dichotomy between USAID program and IBS program.
In terms of philosophy of community development.
Community development.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we kept hearing from USAID officials that their primary goal in life was political and economic stabilization.
Uh-huh.
That is their stated goal in life, which I turned around and started saying was made a much, not no much better acronym than USAID.
Or was it what?
U.S. Agency for Political and Economic Stabilization.
U.S. Agency. U.S.
Or us.
Oh, okay. Gotcha now.
Much, much more us.
Us eight.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
And I guess it is gold.
For progress as they saw.
Yeah.
One
thing.
So it wasn't yet, though, just to follow up on my question, it wasn't yet at the kind of anti-war thing that would later get people to quit and say, can't be a part of it,
No, we were in that turmoil there.
Mm-hmm.
But we thought, I think most of the idea was that we were part of the solution.
Okay.
So we were going to stay, and we might be arguing that we could pull on something, but we would stay because we were part of the solution.
Okay.
It might have been later.
No, that's an important distinction. I mean, you know, I mean, I empathize because
no,
I was asking at about the same time.
And the pilot would come in to pick me up and have to get out and get back to go to the holes in the air. So yes, the fear was there.
Yeah.
But I think the one woman who told you about this, yeah, he would not fly to be he would not fly home for our transportation or whatever.
Really? I mean, even international regular commercial flights, you would still be terrified.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well,
I could understand that.
Yeah.
Now, what else did I was going to say to him with that would be when you...
Yeah, I
just wanted... What was something... So what did he say? Bring me back up to date on the...
Yeah, I was thinking he... Well, you...
I said I didn't think any of the
others would
be okay. So we were all probably anti-war. Nobody felt that they had to leave
because they were
suffering.
Yeah. I didn't feel
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we
talked
about it
a lot.
Yeah,
we
talked about
not.
The war, and like I said, we...
And a lot of people aren't happy with what the U.S. military is.
U.S. military was mostly in civilian clothes in the
right.
International agreement. There was
not supposed to be. So it was all Air America and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I did take a entomology collection trip to Pakistan and Southern Lai.
Mm-hmm.
And Vietnam, somebody aborted. And joining them that I was going to impact and he was going to pass down the country and that was the time on the edge of the building that they were calculating something in a place on the Vietnamese Cambodian border. But of course I could see that and he wanted us to be close to and we drove up there, and I had permission to collect my bank. So we drove out on the road and got home, took the trip, and set up a nice one, and had a little lunch with a
Lawan,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably incredulous.
And he explained that this was him and John was in a bottle there the night before.
Really?
And we could stay if we got permission from the command post.
Sounds like not very many people.
One of
the single men. Yeah. Because this is one thing that comes to us. And this I want to see.